All right, well, good night, everyone. Tonight is our reconvening for the African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. And tonight we're at part three on chapter six of The Politics Behind Black Male Passivity and Feminization, Bisexuality, and Homosexuality. At our previous meeting we left off, we were approaching the topic of the black male as a sex machine, being one of the few outlets the black man is permitted under white supremacy to express his masculinity. And here in the second part, half of the chapter, we will be able to look at this limited yet unreliable level of masculinity. We have a few members who are on the line. Jalavet.
Hello. We also have Sean.
Hello.
And Brother Amin.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine.
All right.
All right.
Glad y'all able to make it. Okay, I'm going to, I don't know how many have your books out and ready. We're on page 87 in the middle of the second paragraph.
Okay.
Okay. Well, at least the latter part of the second paragraph anyway. And I'll just go ahead and quote her right here, the section where we'll be begin our discussion. The resultant frustration of black manhood potential, a pressure and grievance that cannot be redressed directly at its source under fear of death, forces behavior into dysfunctional, non-satisfying, circular, obsessive-compulsive patterns in areas of people activity where greater degrees of maleness are permitted to be expressed. In other words, sex, sports, and entertainment. Now, we know many black males who obsess over, or rather feel proud to know lots of information about sports, and they wear jerseys and pay money to attend a lot of sporting events, to train their young sons to participate in these activities as expressions of the highest ideals of masculine behavior. And that's only because those particular activities have received the stamp of approval by the white male power structure as suitable outlets for male aggressive conduct. One of the reasons you see gang activity, those are non-approved activities of male aggressiveness, yet they're typically expressed in unconstructive activity. In other words, they're getting together where they could be organizing and using their intellect and athletic ability to oppose white male aggression on the black society. They habitually or customarily use it to attack the black society or to terrorize society in the same way that other white male institutions predate upon the black community. And here in the last paragraph, I'll open with this section here. Under the white supremacy slavery system, the identity of sex machines was imposed upon black males, especially as many hands were needed in the fields for toil and labor. The many babies that were produced gave black males their most open avenue for at least a limited sense of manhood. Presently, with the birth control pills and with the pressure for population zero for all non-white males, that means the white society desires that black males or non-white males to produce fewer children in our current era. This major male ego support has been taken away. So men taking pride in their procreative abilities has been removed or at least severely handicapped. And there have been black males who have been ordered by judicial law or what have you on certain occasions to not have procreate and have infertilize a woman. So anyone have any thoughts about this limited black male expression of masculinity and how he's now being handicapped in the arena of sex? Anyone have any comments on that?
I was just thinking about a rites of passage for our men. There isn't one. One that so that manhood is clearly defined in our community. I don't think we have that definition of masculinity, and then you end up they're basically reaching out, and they're just I think men are expressing themselves in the most rudimentary form that as is understood and as you were saying as allowable in our society.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, the rites of passage and all those things are typically done in a situation where the people aren't following the rules of an oppressor, where now you see people, certain groups instituting various rites of passage, but they haven't really taken hold in the society in a way that has been impactful on a broader scale. Just small segments of our community have done such activity. I think Kwanzaa Kunjufu has a organization that works with young black males. Umar Johnson also. They're very small, and I'm not saying they're insignificant. And we hope that they grow and make a bigger impact on the overall society. However, we're mainly talking about context 1974, and how it's still this is the dominant culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all those things you're saying are absolutely correct. However, these scenarios prevail. We still have people thinking that sex, sports, and entertainment, as defined by the white supremacist culture, are the expressions which are permitted or allowable. All those things you just mentioned are true, and we do have them on the rise, these rites of passages. But the society is still taking orders from Mr. Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? They're not listening to the people who are doing the things that you have just cited that are corrections to this problem that other people have introduced. They're not paying attention to them. They're saying all these things that Mr. Charlie has for me is what we're doing. That's what's in vogue. That's what's in style. And we don't care about these other programs yet. So, we're still taking some time before, we have to improve our ability to reach those people and convince them that their current behavior is unsuitable, not good enough. So we have to institute some system of rewards and punishments.
It reminded me of something we talked about before. Remember we talked about the barbershop mm-hmm. and how and that's what you hear in the barbershop. There's only talk about it's a gathering place for men where you hear about sex, sports, and entertainment.
The
magazines on the table are about sports, sex, and entertainment.
Right.
I don't think they I don't know if some of the barbershops used to have the pornographic magazines like they used to.
No, they don't. I ain't seen it in the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, but when I first started going to the barbershop, this is the first time you were introduced to this. And the older guys are passing this down to you. And then Sports Illustrated was there, and Jet Magazine was there, and some other black entertainment book with a bunch of entertainers in it. And the barbershop is always a place where a rite of passage for young children back then. Now you're going to the barbershop to hang out with these guys. And this is all that you thought. It was sex, entertainment. That's what the talk was.
Right. Or maybe politics.
Maybe politics. But the political talk was usually about what we couldn't do.
Right, yeah, right, right. What we couldn't do, and right, exactly, oh, right. It's pathetic. It truly is. And nobody seems to. I mean, no, I'm not saying nobody. Of course, there's a lot of people who want to do it. That's why we're here, because we want to do it. we're talking about outside of, I mean, we had to come together and make this forum to discuss these matters, because this book was out almost, was released, you know, almost 40 years ago. I mean, this article was written almost 40 years ago anyway. And we have all of these civic organizations. We have all of these social institutions and various action groups and whatever. And they haven't even approached this situation the way the author of this title have and other titles like it, and the forum that we've created here. And, you know, because we should have just walked into a situation where these matters were being dealt with by these so-called professionals, you know. And they have the means, they have the network to do it, and the only reason why I can conclude why they're not doing it is because they don't want to. Anybody have any take on that?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to comment on the atmosphere of the barbershop. I was going to really ask a question, like when you guys were going, were you being taken by your fathers or by older brothers or uncles or whatever? Because I know, like, nowadays they kind of cater the barbershop atmosphere sort of like a family environment because of the number of single mothers who have to take their sons to get haircuts and stuff, and they don't want those magazines on display because they find them, some of the ladies find them offensive. I know I've taken my nephew on occasion, and I know when I first went to a barbershop, a male's barbershop or whatever, we saw them out, and then they would make an effort to kind of cover up stuff like that, you know, and then the tone, I'm pretty sure the tone changes in the conversation, like when ladies are present, and I was just curious about that. Were you guys, you know, was the atmosphere the same as it is now, or was it, you know, uncles, fathers, brothers, or whatever taking you to the barbershop?
I mean, yeah, man, take it. I haven't been to a barbershop in 10 years.
I started cutting my own hair. It was still going on in the 90s. It was the last time I went to a barbershop. After that, I just started cutting my own hair.
Yeah. My grandfather had a barbershop, which my uncles have inherited. And it's always been family style. They're very puritanical, and they've never had any risque publications in the building. But when I've gone to other barbershops when I was young, and they had some pornographic material there. So I would argue that it depends on if the barbershop is family style or not.
Yeah.
Some barbershops cater to, you know, families or whatever. Others are just places where they and their friends come get their hair cut, and they probably drink beer in there and have smoke. So, you know, it just depends on the type of barbershop it is. I would argue, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have any other thoughts on that before we move on?
No, that I guess it's changed. I never saw one like that.
Yeah, we have a couple of other people on the line. If you're interested in sharing in the discussion, please press 1 so that we'll know that you want to be a part of the particular book discussion.
Yes. Okay. But here she, we move on. She discusses the lack of males in the home. She says a recent statistics revealed that as of 1974, 34% of black families are headed by females as compared to 10% of white families. And this figure is increasing each year. In the metropolitan area of Washington, D.C., there are 61,000 black male children growing up in homes without their fathers or other father surrogates, while 90% of their teachers in the public schools are also females. This produces a massive deficiency in adult males for role modeling and imprinting. Such role modeling and imprinting are essential for black male children to understand adult male role functioning. Wow. So, little boys look at adult males to and they mimic the behavior so they can learn, you know, what, you know, a man is supposed to be. You know, I guess we all remember when we were young, all of the men in this farm. We remember when we were young, we looked up to the older males, and we thought they knew what they were supposed to be doing. We thought they were cool, in other terms. And we tried to emulate their behavior. Maybe they walk, maybe the music they listen to, maybe even the clothes that they wear. We wanted to copy that because that's what young males do in society, just like young females in society. We emulate the older because they're preparing. We're hardwired programmed to learn their behavior in order to survive, to reach that level of development. Because we instinctively understand that in order to progress from one phase to the next, we must rely on the knowledge of supposedly older and wiser people. And because the children haven't really processed or haven't had the wisdom to determine if those older adults have necessarily some intense survival function. We see that their existence and their functioning is a testimony to their survival. Does anybody else have any thoughts on this passage?
I don't know. I growing up, there were a limited amount of people to look up to. It's funny you mentioned D.C. I lived in D.C. for a number of years, and you saw that there was a lot of single parent headed households run by females, and you saw that same thing in the school system, mostly run by females. There wasn't much male guidance there in the D.C. area when I lived there. It's changed a little bit now, but it was apparent.
I was just thinking when you were talking, Charles, about the fatherless home, and I was thinking about some of the families that I know of now, just in my personal circle, that are fatherless homes, and many of those people, those adults, came from homes where there were fathers. So I'm wondering if we are allowing the idea that much of this comes from an absent father really be a greater issue, not just that the man is not there, but even while he's there. See, the damage, what I'm getting at is that maybe the damage was already done. And that the father was at one point in the home, and that those people produced the families now, where him being there is insignificant.
You know what? I did skip over a section which I probably should have read. Would have helped clear up that point you just made or the question you just raised. In the previous section, Dr. Wellesley states, without jobs, income, power, or even babies, there is no. Without jobs, income, power, even babies, there is no proof of sexual functioning. When this reality is coupled with the awareness that many women can receive more from a welfare check than they can from their male partners, I would change it that they can receive more consistency from a welfare check than their male partners. The reason for women respecting men and staying with them steadily decline, and black female male alienation increases. And I believe I'm familiar with the cases you're talking about. And in those cases, I think right here, this section I just read addresses that there is a little respect for that male in those environments. And so those women that you speak of who went on to another generation decided that having a male wasn't critical,
right,
to the home, because the men in the previous generation did not pursue and demand power and respect, which is what men should be doing. That's the number one thing men should be doing, is trying to acquire power.
Right.
And when men aren't trying to acquire power, they're not going to have power, and they're going to be less respected. And so, and how is a woman going to be able to look up to her man as she should if he isn't putting himself, working very diligently to put himself in the best position to protect his woman?
Right, and also protect his children.
Right, that's the same thing.
The power, you can't protect your family.
Right, and so he cannot get the respect from his woman until he does that which is the most he should do. Now, you know, that's why a lot of us black men complain, hey, I don't want to have stress, because even though we know we have an ambivalent mind in this particular era of our existence under white supremacy. Even if women may say, oh, you need to protect me, and on the other hand, they're saying, hey, don't go and do it. We it's our job to do the right thing. Because my number one argument for this is black men aren't being held back by black women. Because if black women had so much power to stop other black men from doing that which he claimed he wanted to do, then no black men would cheat. That would be the end of cheating.
Because mm-hmm.
they would say, hey, my woman said that she wanted me cheating, so I'm not going to do it. You know? They do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So if their woman tell them, don't go out there and fight for power and freedom, and then they should be out there fighting for power and freedom. There is no excuse. It's none. So, that's not an excuse, but the only explanation we have is that the collective, I'm not speaking individual, the collective black male populace is afraid of the pursuit of power.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because that takes, you know, yeah, that takes real work.
And it takes courage in light of the repercussions, because there will be some.
Right, yeah, it takes courage. You got to be brave. You got to be willing to die and be willing to hope that your brother takes the carriage, the standard on and achieves the next level. And if you don't care about yourself, you don't love yourself, you don't care about your brother, you don't care about him, and the battle and the cause and all the people and all this stuff, they consider that crap. And all they want to do is they want everybody else to die so they can have an intercourse with their neighbor's wife. That's all they want to do. So we must conduct our own type of triage separation between these weak relatives of ours who are content with living on their knees. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
Well, the alternative is sports, entertainment.
That's right.
That's the alternative, yeah.
That's the alternative. That's right. Keep buying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Keep flossing, you know. Keep
That's
buying
it.
Stuff. And flossing is the, she didn't include that in here, but that's another way of expressing manliness. Rims. You know, not to say rims are bad, but if that's all that you have for your masculinity, you know.
And not even, I mean, when you talk about flossing, I think being able to provide.
Yes.
And take care of and purchase whatever extravagances, you know, in your society. At one point it may have been spices or gold or whatever those things. That is a part of manhood.
Right.
But it is. It is a missed, I think flossing is a misplaced.
A misapplication. Right. It's
a man's desire to shower his woman and his family with those things.
Now, you're absolutely right. I'm saying, like, when you see a white man with 20-inch rims on his car, you know he's not playing around. You know he has the money to back up the rims that he just bought.
Right, hopefully. Uh-huh.
Hopefully. I'm just saying, you know, they don't floss like black folks.
Right.
They don't floss the same way as we do. They floss, but not like we do.
Right, a little bit different, right.
Our flossing is empty. We'll buy a Mercedes Benz, but that's all we got. You see what I'm saying?
Purchasing dignity.
Yes, we're trying to purchase dignity.
Right, we're trying to purchase our freedom, correct.
Yeah, purchase our freedom and all that, but it's to tell the woman, I can give you what you need. I can provide. I'm a strong man. I'm a strong, suitable male. Reproduce with me. But the truth is, he's renting these wheels.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
And he'll buy, and he'll rent them before he buys food.
Right. He'll rent them before he buys food. So the wheels are not sending the proper signal to the female about his ability to provide for her. It's a decoy. It's a trap. And so, that's what's going on. But Sean had something she wanted to say.
No, I was just going to say just exactly what you guys said, living above your means, trying to, portray a lifestyle of something that you have and you really don't. And all you have is basically what the outside can see, and you're trying to hold on to that because just like I think Brother Amin said, renting them, not even owning the wheels. You're trying to rent them or parking a Mercedes and don't have any place to park it. You don't have a home to park it in front of or whatever.
Right.
Beer money and champagne taste, and it just doesn't match.
Right. Or you see people, well, they may be first generation money and they out buying Mercedes Benz and $1 million homes. If your family hasn't been wealthy for three, four, five generations, then you shouldn't buy the Mercedes-Benz in the big house. You need to be living way modest because we don't understand that you have to prepare and build wealth that's going to last generations into the future. And since we've come from abject poverty and we don't know anything about the future and that we should be preparing for it, and we're so busy trying to prove to white society and to our black brothers that in this order that we're better than our brother, that we're just as good as the white man, and on the other hand, and that we're better than our other black brothers. So we can look down on them and say, you should have been doing what I'm doing to get what I have, and they can communicate to the white man that, hey, I'm just as good as you because I have what you have.
And very often they're copying somebody who's buying their Mercedes with dividends off the stock. They didn't even get up in the morning to get the money to get the Mercedes. And then you have our folks copying that, and you woke up every morning and you still owe a note on that,
That's right.
And that's another thing, allowing your possessions to define you. They feel like their net worth is whatever they have, whatever car you have or whatever home you live in, that defines you or the person that you are, and they're really empty. I mean, not saying everyone who has those things is, but a lot of them who are trying to accumulate all those possessions and really aren't concerned about, the substance of their character or anything else for that matter, or anyone else, are trying to improve the living conditions of, the neighborhood or, the schools, none of that. They're not concerned with anything except for how I look when I ride down the street and what house I park in front of when I get there, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just putting all black people who do that on Front Street because they were all wearing rags 100 years ago. And so if they think they had just because they have two nickels to rub together to go and give them all to their captor, they really don't have the wealth that they believe they have just because they qualified for the credit to get the vehicle or whatever. And I'm not saying they shouldn't buy a car, but that they should not extend themselves to the point that they cannot they're no benefit to the community.
Oh, I was going to say, we were talking about an article that recently came up with this that one guy, the child, the pedophile kind of guy, R. Kelly.
Oh yeah,
that had recently had a foreclosure, and he. And my first thought was, why do you have a mortgage?
Right.
But he's somebody who a lot of people admire, and this is what he does. He could have done so much for the community that he grew up in, or what have you, but he misuses his money to back to flossing again.
Right. He had all that money, and he could have been a better benefit to his community, but he spent all his resources trying to impress other people. So, what good are you to the community where he has said, well, I can't do all this for y'all. My mortgage is $800,000 a month, and I have this $12 trillion vacation home in some uncharted island somewhere. Of course, that'd be trouble to get to it. That's a joke. Is that, he can't do what he can for the community because he's so busy trying to, purchase this lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
you know, that presents this false image of his success. You know, he was just about to go to prison. You know what I'm saying? He just narrowly escaped jail, you know, and here he is, back out doing it.
he's way too pretty to be in there.
You know, he didn't learn anything. That's the point. He should have learned, you know, man, I didn't even have no white man in his position wouldn't be even in trial.
Mm-hmm.
See, he understand that, no, you don't have security and wealth like that, like your counterpart. You got a lot of work to do, Mr. Pied Piper. So, you know. And stop blowing that little flute and luring them kids to your house. Oh, that's funny. Some good humor at his expense. There you go. He's from Chicago, too, I think. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. I like that city. It's a lot of good stuff there. Anyway, as the next paragraph, she's moving into this idea about alienation, how the alienation between the black male and the black female is continuing due to this lack of male self-esteem and how men are moving towards femininity. And I'll probably read this final paragraph. We'll discuss it and have to continue the following week. But here we go. It's page 88 for those who are following along. As black males and females become more alienated, as our current rates of separation and divorce indicate, and as black females are being left to rear black children alone, the alienation, hate, and disgust felt toward black males are visited upon their sons subtly. A female alienated from males is hard-pressed to reinforce patterns of conduct in a male child that remind her of unhappiness and pain. She is much more inclined to say, there you go, looking and acting like the no-good nigga father of yours. She probably say daddy in real life. The black female teacher at school who also may be experiencing alienation from her black man, if not inclined to make the same statement in such a direct manner, only says it more subtly, says nothing, or simply acts out her hate, disgust, and distrust of black males, achieving the same end result. Have experienced that. And that's my line, because I've experienced black female teachers giving me grief when I was a kid and even as an adult in college, and I didn't understand what was going on until reading this paragraph. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
No, I see a lot of that. A lot of my early teachers weren't like that, but later on in life, I grew up in a different time. Over time, it started to get like that, where you could see the teachers started to alienate students.
Yeah,
and in the home, you know, you see that too.
Yeah, I had I could say maybe five. I can just count on one hand, and I can tell you that weren't giving me grief, black, you know, all white, really. The rest of them was giving me negativity. And if I had known this, I'd have been very careful about picking certain people to work with in terms of like maybe teaching certain projects or something like that. And, you know, whatever. Enough of my personal problems. Let me just move on.
Like you said, some of it you kind of know, you can kind of sense in a way. You might not have had the guideline or whatever, or it might not have been spelled out. And like the younger generation, how they say, oh, they're hating on me. You know, you can kind of tell that somebody doesn't have your best interest at heart or whatever, or that they're envious for some reason, but you just can't pinpoint what it's stemming from or why, you know. You're thinking maybe they're just in a bad mood, and we try to excuse it because, like you said, when you're young, you want to believe the best, you know, from everyone, from the world or whatever, so.
Yes, you're right, and our parents would just...
Can't call it what it is, yeah.
Right, right. We
I
couldn't call it my...
Now
go ahead.
I did have
oh,
a teacher.
Yeah.
She wasn't talking about my family. I grew up in Harlem. You know, and she was this woman was quite elderly, but she used to it was my third grade teacher, and she would always and apparently she taught Mickey Barnes, the drug dealer.
Drug dealer, right?
And she would always say that to students that you're just like Mickey Barnes. I taught Mickey Barnes when he was a kid, and you're just like Mickey Barnes. She didn't say it to me, but she would say it all the time to other students that gave her problems.
And you know what's sad? Mickey Barnes is probably very intelligent because he had to be to count his money to, you know what I'm saying, to make his living.
Well, yeah.
But when I was management. But when we were kids, he was like He was like a leech on the community. Everybody, he was really hated in the community, and he was like a leech. And so people would mention his name, like he was a monster.
Yeah, you know?
And,
he had to be
and,
so
and his teacher would always do that.
Oh, here one, he destroyed everybody's family. Yeah, they spit every time they mentioned his name. And we should be doing
when
that
I,
now.
When I grew up, there were all over Harlem. There were just people laying in the staircase, drug addicts. And so whenever you heard his name, everybody just cringed. So this teacher would constantly use his name to describe students that acted up.
Right.
So that was kind of like the father. It was kind of like you're just like your father. Like this guy was somebody's father.
Right. The wayward father that you know they're being accused of following his footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
Here's an interesting quote to follow that up. She says of schools and their personnel, like all other aspects of the racist system, do their share to alienate black males from maximal functioning and thus further the ultimate alienation of black males from themselves and their manhood. As a result of this pattern of socialization, black males soon learn that it is easier to be a female child than a male child and more promising to be an adult black female than an adult black male. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Now that I do know about.
Oh, I agree with that. I think it is easier to be, you know.
Right. She's not saying that it's debatable. She was saying they learn that it is easy because the black male is under attack.
I think the black male probably picks that up even before he gets in school. I think he probably picks that up at home, you know, around, you know, the parent and sees her interaction with the father's interaction with society. I don't think it's difficult to see, you know.
Yes.
Even prior to that time. Okay, you got about 3 minutes.
Okay. Well, hopefully we will be able to help the society see that the black male has to learn to assume, not so we talk about assuming a role, but we have to learn what those roles are for the black male. Like I mentioned, I think on our second meeting that when the black male moving into his masculinity is the same process as the black female moving into her femininity. And like we discussed in Rhea Lynch later on the Woman's Song Community Experience, that the roles were reversed in our development.
Mm-hmm.
So they may not have been reversed completely, but we know they're reversed in patterns of how we function in society. The males need to... we need to reacquaint ourselves with our natural rights of behavior and women, and we need our women to move into their right? And then when we learn, we have to learn what the process is, why we're not functioning the way we should, what all of the reasons are for the distrust, alienation, and we must combat that and build the trust. We have to build trust with each other. We have to do the things that many think cannot be done. That's the tagline for Women's Sound Community Experience. And by doing those things, relearn those behaviors that we should be demonstrating and carrying out in our everyday lives and relating to each other in terms of power. Like Dr. Wilson, Amos Wilson says, we have to develop the power of relationships. And once we start that, then we will have the necessary tools to establish black male power and then black female power. In other words, women be able to raise the children as benefit the community, which benefits them. Because once we stop seeing ourselves as benefiting alien people, then we'll be on the way to build a nation. And we thank everybody for joining us tonight, and we look forward to you all joining us again on part 4 of Black Male Passivity, Feminization, Bisexuality, and Homosexuality, and we'll continue this discussion until we reach the end of the chapter 6. Thank you all, and have a good night.
Good night.
Peace.
Peace.
Good night.
Shalom.
Shalom. Join the Women's Song Community Experience every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on blogtalkradio.com. We will do the thing that many think cannot be done.
Join us for the sweetest show on internet radio, Honey Soul Radio, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Join your hostess, the Honey Viva and Miss Lady P, every Tuesday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, and 10 p.m. Eastern. Honey Soul Radio on blogtalkradio.com. Now add a little honey to your flavor.
Listen in to African Conversations on the African Knowledge Network, where we will converse with researchers about matters significant to the African diaspora community. Join us on Facebook on the African Conversations community page. Enjoy the dialogue on African Conversations on blogtalkradio.com.
Welcome to AfricanImpressions.com. African Impressions is a black-owned business that offers products made by the global African community. African Impressions offers the finest in African-made jewelry, craft, clothing, and so much more. As the renaissance of the African community rapidly approaches, you need to add acquiring products crafted by members of the global African family to your repertoire of activities. We must rediscover more of our ancient cultural habits, which we struggle to regain, and incorporate them into our daily lives. Support African craftsmen and women by shopping at AfricanImpressions.com today. Hope to see you there.